This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of Treasures in the Dark, 90 Reflections on Finding Bright Hope Hidden in the Hurting, written and narrated by Catherine Wolfe, and is available everywhere audiobooks are sold.
And now, Christ in Pop Culture presents Persuasion with Aaron Straza and Hannah Anderson. Everyone, I'm Aaron Straza, and with me is Hannah Anderson. We're your hosts for Persuasion, the place where fine ladies, rational minds, and the best kind of company gather to discuss all sorts of ideas and issues. Thanks for joining our conversation today. We're in the middle of a mini-series for late summer. It's called Getting By, and each of these episodes, we're inviting a guest who has something specific to share about how we can get by in life, considering the world as it is today. Now, Hannah, in our previous conversation, we had Wendy Alsop with us, and she spoke with us about enduring in difficulty. And I really feel like that was the perfect start to this series.
Absolutely. Because I think at some level, we just have to come to terms with the fact that hard times are a reality, like they're normal. I think it's very easy for us to believe that hard times are the aberration, that life is just generally good. And when you hit a patch of either personal or collective difficulty, that this is somehow abnormal. And so it's just so helpful to kind of recenter and reorient our sense of what life is. And for most people in most of human history, it's just been very difficult. And the difficulties that we encounter, again, whether it's personally or collectively, are pretty normal. And there are ways that we need to learn resiliency, and there are truths that will help us go through suffering in a way that is, if not victorious, at least coping. At least we can get by.
That is the thing. I think with this series, this idea of getting by, sometimes it feels like you're barely able to pick yourself up and move forward. But generally speaking, after those stretches where it is so difficult, you are able to pick yourself up a bit and move forward. But very often that comes at cost. I mean, it's painful. Suffering isn't fun. It's not like we need to go seek it out, but it is here. And so we need to learn and learn together. How do we get through these times that will come? And like you said, they are a normal part of life, but none of us want to sign up for them. I mean, all of us want to find the quickest route out of the suffering. But in the midst of them, how do we get by? How do we move forward? And how do we make it through? So I love the start of this series and the conversations that we have had and the ones that are coming up. And today we have another installment. We're so thrilled to have another guest with us today to help us talk through this idea of how do we get by. Today we have Gina D'Alfonso with us. Gina's been with us before on Persuasion twice, I believe. And so if you are a regular listener with us, if you've been with us along the way, you'll recognize her, but you may also know her from all of her writing. She's authored a book on being single in the church, and that's titled One by One. She has another book coming out on friendship. It releases this month, and there'll be more on that in just a bit. But she's also written for lots of other publications and outlets, and she's a Christ and Pop Culture staff writer. She's just all over the place. Gina, we're so glad you're back with us today at Persuasion.
I'm so glad to be back. Thank you.
Yeah, we're thrilled that you're here. You always bring in great insight, and you help us to process things that we need to know. In the past, you've talked with us about your love for old films, particularly Singing in the Rain. I will make sure I get that linked up because that was such a fun conversation. And so we want to make sure all you listeners out there, if you haven't heard Gina talk about Singing in the Rain, you need to listen to that one.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
It was.
So, Gina, we have to ask you, though, how are you getting by in these days? How are you surviving? Are you making it? Because we are just barely. And if you are making it, how? How tell us.
Oh, first and foremost, I am getting by reading, which is pretty much my natural go-to and my natural reaction for everything in life, every time in life, every difficulty in life. It's really absurd the number of books I have.
I love this.
I do tend to have more than one book going at any given time. But right now, when we are largely stuck at home, when we need escapes, when we need distractions, or when we need, you know, we also need a little bit of wisdom and insight and guidance coming into our lives, I have just feel like I'm diving into a book with every spare moment. And there are so many. for my book club, I'm reading The Warmth of Other Suns, which is
a massive
book, but yes. So good. I'm reading Amy Bird's new book. I just finished up a book on famous female literary friendships. I'm just so many going at the same time. So I gotta ask you,
Gina, do you do the Goodreads challenge, the Goodreads yearly annual challenge where you're supposed to pick a number of books that you're going to read in a year? Because I gotta say, 2020 just totally.
Well, if I had known, it really was going to be the ideal year for it. I don't do the challenge just because I always know I'm going to read a lot of books in a year. I never quite know how many, but I am on Goodreads. I like being on Goodreads and, you know, checking them off as I go and rating them and so forth, but I haven't done the challenge, but it would have been a good idea.
This would have been the year for it, for sure. This is how I read too, Gina. I have so many books going and I have them all over the house. And sometimes I misplace a book. Like there was a book I started last summer that I loved, and then I got into lots of books and then I couldn't find the book. And amazingly, just like a month or two ago, I found it under a stack of other books that I didn't know that's where it was. So I do agree with you, like lots of books all the time. Like this is just how I live my life. But definitely during the summer, during the lockdown restrictions, I've been reading a ton. It's been great.
Erin, that is such a benefit of being absent-minded. And I've known this for a while. But like you have all of these pleasant surprises all the time.
It really is. It really was. I was like, oh, here's this book. I was so thrilled because I was starting to get bothered. Like, oh, I'd see it on Goodreads. Like it's been on my in reading progress list for so long. And I kept thinking, I've got to find that book. And I found it. So I'm going to finish that one up here real quick.
Oh, good.
Now, speaking of good books, though.
Yes.
Gina.
We need to hear about Gina's newest book. It is being released this month. The title of it is The Remarkable Friendship Between C.S. Lewis and Dorothy L. Sayers. It's from Baker Publishing. Gina, we want to hear a bit about this book and tell us about who it's about and why you were inspired to write it.
Okay, well, this is about the friendship of Dorothy L. Sayers, who is best known today as a mystery novelist, one of the great mystery novelists, and C.S. Lewis, who I think we're all familiar with from Narnia, Screwtape, Mere Christianity, all the rest. I first found out about their friendship. Well, let me backtrack a little bit. I first started reading Lewis in high school a little bit. When I got to college at Messiah College, now Messiah University, I took a class called Theology in Oxford Christian Writers, and this is where I encountered Tolkien and some of the other Inklings, but also this is where I encountered Dorothy L. Sayers. Because she was not just a great mystery novelist, but she was also a Christian and a friend of C.S. Lewis and did some work in apologetics like Lewis did. And so this class, I think we covered 7 writers and explored the web of relationships between them. But when I went off on my own and started reading Sayers' correspondence and some of her other writings and some of Lewis's other writings, I started to pick up on the friendship between these two in particular and just enjoyed it. I mean, we are so fortunate to have so many letters between them. Mm-hmm. And their letters are just so much fun to read. They're warm and witty and sometimes a little combative, but you know, that's how friendship goes.
That's right. And, that's a sign of true friendship right there.
Exactly. And so this was this friendship that was sort of lying there in plain sight, and yet not really, it wasn't something that had really been explored in a lot of detail, I found. We all know about Lewis and Tolkien and the Inklings and that wonderful group and the wonderful work they did together. But Lewis had other friends too, and Sayers was a very good friend. And I just found it so inspiring and interesting, and something that I thought should be better known.
Well, I have loved this book, Gina, and I've already told you this privately, but I want to tell everyone else. I have so enjoyed this book. It's really a sweet spot for Gina. She has this understated, observational humor that's just perfect for nonfiction and bibliographic writing. And so she lets Sayers and Lewis take center stage, but then occasionally, Gina, you'll just make these kind of observational comments that just are perfect and on the mark. So I have loved reading this book. And one thing you mentioned about the letters between Sayers and Lewis being the primary, way that we know about their friendship, I found it remarkable that you mentioned that Lewis discarded a lot of his correspondence, a lot of his letters, but he didn't discard Sayers' letters. Like, he kept them, and the very fact that he kept them was testament that they meant something to him, and that their correspondence was a very significant part of his own work and his own friendship with Dorothy. We'll call her Dorothy.
Yeah, that's right. As you say, he had a habit of discarding letters, and unfortunately, he seems to have discarded at least the first couple of hers, according to his habit, which is sad because we don't have them to look at. But as their friendship went on, he did start keeping her letters, and it's interesting, he valued her not just as a friend, but also just as a great letter writer, and he would continually tell her this. He would say, you know, you are a great letter writer. someday you may be more famous for your letters even than for your other writings. Another place he said, you're a great letter writer, I'm not, which isn't true. He was a good letter writer, but he was just impressed by the way she wrote letters as much as he was by, you know, what she said in her letters and how she expressed her friendship in her letters.
And really, it was letters that started their friendship. Wasn't as you wrote in the book that Sayers actually wrote him something of a, I don't know if you call it fan mail or a very affirming letter about some of the work he had done, which I do think that's a way to get on the good side of an author if you want to start a friendship with an author, just speaking personally.
And it came at a really good time because she was famous by this time. She had written most or all, I think, of her mystery novels. She was really well known. I mean, she was right up there with Agatha Christie. And he was just beginning to be known as a writer. And so, I mean, that's the time when you want well-known writers writing to you and encouraging you. And she did that for him. And it meant a lot to him.
This episode is brought to you in part by Beyond Ordinary Women Ministries, which prepares Christian women for leadership. At BOW, we believe that every woman is a leader because she influences someone. So, whom do you influence? Do you mentor a woman, serve in the workplace, or do you lead a small group, teach the Bible, or even lead an entire ministry? No matter who or how many you influence, our free online resources will help equip you. Our videos, podcast episodes, and articles from experienced women leaders will encourage you and perfect your leadership skills. They offer wisdom for dealing with ministry pitfalls, current biblical issues, health for your own soul, and insights for shepherding others well. In addition, BOW offers Bible studies designed to connect women of multiple generations. They provide a challenge to both women new to the Bible and those wanting to dig deeper. Be our guest and browse all of our free resources and low-cost Bible studies at beyondordinarywomen.org.
Well, Gina, I have loved your book so far. I'm just working through it, and I have loved it, just like what Hannah was saying, is that you have provided such a rich insight into this friendship. And that's why we wanted to bring you on to this conversation today, is because we are looking at how we get by. And there's something very beautiful about this friendship that you are able to show us with Lewis and Sayers. And there's something about their friendship friendship in particular that we can learn from. One of the things that we need to know is that they were communicating and corresponding in a very difficult period of history. Could you talk a little bit about the backdrop of this friendship, the time frame, and then maybe share a little bit about what we can learn from how they communicated and maybe what those difficulties were contributing to their friendship?
Yes. They first became friends in the early 40s, 1942 or thereabouts, which of course we know as the time period of World War II. So as British people, they were caught up in the thick of this, not so much personally as just part of something the entire country and the entire world was going through. Mm-hmm. And it was so it was a time, and more than that, they had both gone through World War I before that, which mm-hmm. Lewis had been a soldier in that war, and it had altered his life in permanent ways, just as it did for everybody who was in it. Sarah, too, had some involvement on her end, and her husband dealt with the after effects of that war for years and years and years. So they both had this wartime experience, and they were going through this wartime experience when they first connected. And they both have this indomitable spirit that comes mm-hmm. through, which is so impressive when you read what they wrote and you consider what they were going through. Bombings and Lewis was taking in children who were fleeing from London, mm-hmm. and just all this danger that they were going through, and it just did not. It must have worn them down to some extent, but you don't sense it in their writings and their letters. You don't sense it wearing them down. Maybe it's some of that British stiff upper lip thing. maybe it's that quality. And yet, you sense that they did draw support too from friendship and from their common interests, from their faith, from their love of literature. Mm-hmm. Sarah's famously, when she was on her way to a bomb shelter, grabbed a copy of Dante on her way there and started reading it while she was in the bomb shelter. And from there came this great love of Dante that led her to translate the Divine Comedy. So,
wow. See?
So, you know, she had her priorities in order.
We're all in good company reaching for a book in unprecedented times, right?
Right.
But also they developed this bond that I think their friendship too helped them in difficult times. And aside from the war, they both had a lot of personal difficulties at home. Sarah's husband had dealt with alcoholism and lifelong illness, and Lewis's brother was dealing with alcoholism. They both had a number of personal difficulties they were struggling with, and it wasn't so much that they shared their difficulties with each other because they didn't really do that until later in their friendship. But they both drew such strength from the intellectual side of friendship. They loved talking about faith, theology, literature, common interests. And that just in itself was a great support to them both. It was exactly the kind of bond they needed. It was the kind of conversation love. Mm-hmm. It really just absorbed them both, and it helped strengthen them.
If I hear you correctly, it sounds like you're saying the commonality, the friendship they had around intellectual and apologetic pursuits was kind of maybe a reprieve or a strengthening that would enable them to continue to suffer well in other ways. So it wasn't necessarily like they were coming in just dumping all of their emotions and finding this person who could know them or get them at this emotional level, but more it was that they found such sustenance from these kinds of conversations, whether it was with each other or with other people, that work gave them life and power and strength to go back to lives of suffering and to find some stability in the midst of really social upheaval.
Yes, exactly. Lewis says, I think it's in, maybe it's in The Four Loves, somewhere where he writes about friendship. He has such interesting ideas about friendship that when we read them now, that they strike us, or they strike me at least as very different from what we tend to think. You know, he'll say, you know, friends don't have to know all the personal messy details of each other's lives. That they just have to have these common interests. They have to connect over these things. Friendship has to be about something. And, you know, something about that makes me think that they would have been great Facebook friends if they had lived today. Because you know how on Facebook, you'll connect with somebody over a shared interest.
Sure.
And just really dive into all the aspects of that. And then maybe later you learn that your friend has a sibling or a dog or, or you know, whatever. And that's how Lewis did friendship a lot of the time. And Sarah's like that. She was into that too. The things that for them were fundamental, so much of that was intellectual, and they just really connected in that way. But then it's fascinating to see how they built their foundation there, and they encouraged each other in their work and so forth, and in their writing and reading. And then from there, it did start to get more personal over the years. They did start to talk about personal things, difficulties, frustrations, and when it came to that, they became very supportive of each other because they had already built their bond. It had become a really strong bond, and from there they were able to support each other. It wasn't until like near the end of their correspondence, Sarah's was the one who died first, and they kept up their friendship till the very end of her life. But it towards the end of this, you start to see him saying that his brother is an alcoholic, and Sarah's knew and liked his brother, but she didn't know this. His brother was an alcoholic. And then she said, yes, my husband was an alcoholic too. And it's hard. I know it's hard. And so, and then he was able to tell Sarah's about his marriage when he wasn't always able to tell all of his friends because some of them weren't really supportive of that, but Sarah's was, and she was very supportive. She was very congratulatory. She wrote them a little poem for wedding present. Mm-hmm. And it's lovely how he really starts to open up to her and writes to her all these beautiful things about his marriage that he doesn't always feel inclined to confide to all his other friends.
That's so interesting, Gina, because it seems like today, almost like the measure of the depth of a friendship is, do they know every little detail of everything going on and every whim of the heart and every struggle? And I think in some ways, I even value that. Like, I want people to know me and know all the layers of me, and that's how I feel connected. I think it's interesting, though, that you're bringing in this other side where it's not just knowing all of the little details. It's also looking at something together where you both have an interest, almost like you're both nurturing something together. And there's almost like that provides ground to grow something, and that has its own sustenance back to you. Whereas I feel like a lot of our friendships can be viewed today as more like a therapeutic relationship. This feels more like a shared common goal friendship or relationship that actually is feeding you in a different way than someone who is helping you with all of the inner turmoil that you might feel.
All right. So we have just got to stop right now and recognize the significance of this topic in this moment and the way we do relate to each mm-hmm. other. Like this, I'm just sitting here listening mm-hmm. to this, and all these associations and lights are going off for me. And obviously some of this is based in personality. You know, there are differences between the way people form friendships and the way we think of friendships. So there is that kind of individuality. But I do think as a culture, we approach friendships as that BFF, right?
Yes.
That person who gets me at this deep, deep, deep level, and they know so much about me, and it's very emotional. And I have to be honest, that has always befuddled me. And it may just be that I'm a certain personality that's not inclined to relationships that way. And I remember, I'm just going to throw this out there because I think this conversation is beautiful in what it represents at a larger perspective. Because I mm-hmm. think what you're describing, Gina, about Sayers and Lewis's friendship validates so much that we disdain. That mm-hmm. in this cultural moment, mm-hmm. we move immediately to the emotional and personal. Yes. Uh-huh. And that has to be established before we can do anything else. Yeah. And I remember a couple years ago, I was in a ministry setting and trying to work with some ministry colleagues. And there's another woman, my age, slightly younger, and she insisted on needing to form this deep personal emotional relationship with me in order to do the work of the ministry.
Oh, interesting.
And I was so lost. And she probably thought I was the coldest, most distant, rejected person. But I like literally looked at her and I said, that's not how it works. You do the work together. Your friendship emerges from the common work, from the common ministry, from the common interest. It's not that you're friends together and then your friendship of your emotional attachment becomes the basis for your ability to work together. At least for me, it didn't work that way. But I remember that so clearly because I just felt like we were in parallel universes. Like, I just felt like, no, like, I will become your friend after we have a common goal or a common interest or a common work, and mm-hmm. that will bond us rather than creating the bond, like some emotional.
And then the work comes out.
And then the work comes out of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wonder if that parallels a little bit of our views of marriage, too. How we view marriage as this kind of I married my best friend. And what we mean by that is this deep emotional, you know, I fell in love and this is mm-hmm. the person. And so then the work of marriage and family or whatever, it can only be sustained as long as you have that emotional bond. So right. this is just blowing my mind to hear you talk about this, Gina. And I would say that in a time of cultural upheaval,
yeah.
lots of suffering, the type of friendship that's going to be more stable is not the one that relies on our emotions.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for that because you see them through the course of this friendship, through their letters, you see them becoming more and more and more comfortable with each other by talking about these intellectual things that mattered so much to both of them. And even when they get a little combative, like I said before, even when they disagree and have conflicts, you sense that there's already this shared foundation, this deep bond that is going to hold up through that. And it does, because the same things matter so much to them both. And then later, a little bit later on, you see them sort of experiencing cultural shifts all around them. Lewis, of course, a lot of us know, was at Oxford doing apologetic work. And that was at a time when that caused him to be looked on with some suspicion and just people couldn't understand what he was doing, why he was doing it. You know, an Oxford scholar writing works of popular theology, this is just not done. You know, what are you doing? and so he experienced, and just the culture in general was shifting a lot then. And Christianity, as he and Sayers had both known it all their lives, the role of Christianity in the whole world seemed to be changing. And Sayers was experiencing something of this too. And so now they had this friendship where they could really sort of get each other and support each other. And they did support each other very much through that because Lewis was friends with so many people who were doing imaginative work, creative work. He wasn't really friends with that many apologists. But he had encouraged Sayers to do apologetic work even when she wasn't particularly feeling like it. And so they both found themselves in this role that was regarded with suspicion, just people didn't necessarily comprehend what they were doing. They ended up in a debate on the same side of the debate over Christianity because they had both been attacked in print for their role, for what they were doing. They were accused, I believe, of, you know, trying to elevate theology over science and put down the role of science and so forth. And so their letters to each other about this are very amusing because, you know, they find themselves on the receiving end of this barrage, and they're just talking to each other like, well, you know, that this is how it goes, I guess.
That part of the book was hilarious.
Uh-huh.
Because just to let listeners know, this woman had written a book against Lewis and Sayers and who else?
T.S. Eliot.
And like literally she wrote an entire book against mm-hmm. these people saying why they're wrong. And Lewis and Sayers were corresponding about whether the other had read the book. And I think it was Sayers basically said, I'm not going to spend money to read a book that's bashing me. I mean, that's my contemporary interpretation of it. But she's like, I'm not going to spend money for that. It was hilarious.
Yeah, and they agreed to debate this lady. And as it turned out in the end, their opponent had to pull out and somebody substituted for her. But they did this debate. By all accounts, they did very well together in this debate. And, you know, oh, to have been a fly on the wall and to have seen and heard this, it must have been amazing. We have a few of... we have a report of what Sayers said that day. We don't really have the transcript of Lewis' remarks, unfortunately, but they're just amazing to read, and it must have been great to hear. And so they were together in this sort of battle, and yet they were, again, their personalities were very robust, very indomitable. They didn't waste time sitting around pitying themselves for, oh, the whole world is changing. This is really hard. I hate this. You know, they didn't whine about it. They just sort of charged in the battle side by side and, you know, enjoyed themselves. And each of them understood what the other was experiencing. Lewis calls her, and I use this as a chapter title, Lewis calls her Sister Dinosaur because he felt like a dinosaur. He famously said this in a speech. And she wrote and said, you know, I really get that. And so he called her Sister Dinosaur. And so they had this experience of being dinosaurs together. And, you know, they didn't whine or pout about it, but they just were able to commiserate with each other over it.
The parallels that I'm seeing between what they were experiencing and what we may have experienced here in the last few months, it's interesting. There's the backdrop of the social and cultural upheaval and the unrest and difficulties in society. And then there are the faith issues with how people are perceiving Christianity and really calling different ideas to account in terms of faith and theology. It's interesting that these are still the same sorts of struggles, like they change, and yet the type of struggle is still the same. And in some ways, that's encouraging to me to know that here today, we have all kinds of things that we're facing as a society. And then within the realm of faith and Christianity, there are still these things that we are wrestling out and needing to defend in some ways or sort through in other ways. It's encouraging to me to know that, okay, this is something that we're all going to face, and friendships make that better. Can you talk a little bit about, whether it's from Lewis and Sayers or just your own insight, Gina, what do you learn from what you've studied in terms of how friendships help people to move through these spaces where it's just difficult in life from all fronts, personal and society and faith? Like, what can you share with us about that?
Well, we learn from this friendship. In this particular case, when they were going through this, that it just meant a lot to each of them to have each other to rely on, to know that somebody was there who understood, who had your back. Mm-hmm. You know, when Lewis gave this speech I've referred to at Cambridge about how he felt like a dinosaur and so forth, his future wife, Joy, was there. Mm-hmm. And even she didn't totally get it because she was a newer Christian. She, you know, she lived in America. She wasn't at Oxford. She didn't see some of the things that Lewis had gone through. And she wrote to somebody, you know, I like the speech, but, you know, I thought I thought he was just a little bit, when he talked about post-Christian Europe, he was getting a little ahead of himself. And you know, she didn't think it was all that bad. But then she had not been there and seen all the things that he had experienced. Tolkien had seen some of it because he taught at Oxford too, and he had seen some of the things that Lewis had gone through up close personal. And then Sayers knew about them too, because although she wasn't right there at Oxford with him, she experienced some of that in her own sphere. And she knew what it was like to be someone defending Christianity in this particular time and place. And she just got it. They just got it. They got each other. They understood each other. They were doing similar work and experiencing similar reactions. And both of them had that sort of character and personality where they didn't want to back down. They weren't trying to be combative just for the sake of being combative. I mean, you know, they had this battle that was set before them, and so they both, you know, sort of charged in side by side. But they weren't just deliberately trying to be obnoxious or anything. They saw this thing happen.
That's the best part of friendship: deliberately being obnoxious together.
they had this battle that was set before them, and they did what they could. But it meant a lot to both of them to know, here's somebody I can go and vent to. And some of the things that Sarah said to Lewis were enormously, they were unusual, but they were also funny. There's this one part I keep quoting where she says to Lewis, you know, you like souls, I don't. he was some sort of a natural evangelist and writer of apologetics, and she didn't ever feel that it came naturally to her, but she said to him, God is taking advantage of the fact that I can't stand intellectual chaos, because all these atheists she would deal with would give her these terrible, sloppy arguments that she just could not abide because she was so intellectual. So she would charge in and try to set them straight. So one way or another, they found themselves in this role where they were trying to fight a spiritual and intellectual battle. And so they could talk to each other about that. They could get support from each other for that. And it meant a lot.
And I think one of the things I love about their friendship was that it also was life-giving to other people. So while they derived support within this context, within their own calling, their own work to be apologetics in a culture that was questioning Christianity and the church, the role of the church in society, it actually supported them in doing their work, which then benefited other people and still benefits us today. And I think that is the test of any healthy relationship. We talk about that perhaps in marriage, but I think it's the same measure of friendship. Does this partnership produce life? Or does it close in on itself and collapse in on itself and create this isolated couple or this isolated group of friends that shuts out the world, and you're either in the group or out of the group? And, you know, Lewis talks about some of that with the inner ring. But the idea that Sayers and Lewis' relationship, while it was mutually supportive, encouraging, and helped them better their craft, actually was opened outward into flourishing and life and goodness to the broader world. And I think that really is the test of whether a friendship is doing what it's supposed to do.
Hey friends, this is Erin. I hope you are enjoying our conversation with Gina about her book on Lewis and Sayers that explores the power of friendship. But Gina actually has another book releasing soon that I wanted to make you aware of. This episode of Persuasion is sponsored by Plow Publishing House, publisher of Gina's new book, The Gospel in Dickens. Plow is giving away 5 copies of the new Dickens volume. To register for the giveaway, visit plow.com/CAPC. That's plough.com/CAPC. Don't miss this chance to win a copy of The Gospel in Dickens.
Their friendship has benefited so many that we don't always realize that, because, as I said earlier, that the story of their friendship hasn't been that well known. But yes, they supported each other in this important work that they were doing for for the benefit of others. They were always talking about projects they should do, how Christianity could help this wartime and then this post-war society that they found themselves in. Sayers was of the opinion that Christians had messed up really badly in the years leading up to the war, that there was so much they could have done that they didn't do, and this had just helped lead to all the catastrophe they found themselves in. And so she was really keen on bringing out Christian principles and applying them to post-war society and helping build society back up on more Christian principles. And so Lewis was somebody she could talk to about this, and he was in agreement, and they were always talking about, you know, what kind of work they could do to help this goal. And so, yes, it was a friendship that was enormously beneficial, not just to themselves.
Well, Gina, I have so enjoyed hearing you talk about these two and their friendship. And I love all of the nuances. I love how much you love talking about them and how much that you have gone so deep into their correspondence and their personalities and their quirks. I mean, that just makes it all the more enjoyable. So thank you so much for being with us. I will make sure that we get the link for your book up just so that everyone can track it down. I'm just two chapters in, and now I cannot wait to do a deep dive and just finish the rest of it, devour it, because it's just been so delightful. So thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, that will do it for our conversation today. We have one more conversation with another special guest in the works for the end of this Getting By series. We do hope you'll come back for that one, and we will put all the links for the other conversations in the show notes. So if this is your first listen for this Getting By series, go back and check out the other conversations, and we look forward to bringing you one last guest next time. We have Luke Harrington on tap to talk through some things to do with humor.
And in the meantime, we'd love for you to join us on Twitter to keep the conversation going. You can find us at PersuasionCAPC. Come join us and talk about how you're getting by, how friendship has helped you in these moments, these last few months, the kinds of things maybe in the past that have helped you get by. You can join us there at Twitter. And of course, Christ and Pop Culture members can pick up the discussion in our community Facebook group. If you're not a member, you can become one for just $5 a month. And your investment supports programs like this and all of the other thoughtful commentary that you find at Christ and Pop Culture through our site, through the digital magazine, and through the other podcasts. You can connect with us at persuasionpodcast.buzz, where you can listen and read show notes, follow up on what's been going on. Of course, we're on Instagram at PersuasionCAPC, Facebook, and again, join us on Twitter at the same tag, PersuasionCAPC.
Thanks so much to Jonathan Clausen. He's our producer for Persuasion and all the other shows in the Christ and Pop Culture podcast network. Give them a listen at christandpopculture.com, or you can go to iTunes and search for Christ and Pop Culture. All the shows will pop up there. While you're at iTunes, we would love your ratings and reviews. That helps us to be found by other listeners who would also enjoy tuning in. And we do thank you for listening to Persuasion, and we will catch you next time.
You have been listening to Persuasion with Aaron Straza and Hannah Anderson, an official production of the Christ and Pop Culture Podcast Network. Please rate and review the show in iTunes and check out our other shows at christandpopculture.com/network. Theme music by Maiden Name.